This is the Kielbasa King Sports Extravaganza.
Hey, 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 Yakshamash.
Club to you too, or whatever.
You know, really, I love your style. I love the way you edit things together. Well, thanks for noticing. It's a real pain.
We welcome to the show, Christian Leitner.
Yeah, I'm proud of my heritage, and my mother used to make a lot of delicious meals, kapusta, funky, pierogi, all that good stuff. I put sour cream on everything, and so a lot of Polish tradition there.
Hey, Yakshamash, everybody. Hope your day is going well. Welcome to the Kielbasa Extravaganza. This is Jake Kokorowski coming to you live from Madison, Wisconsin. We got a very big show today. We got a lot of fun coming up, obviously. It is Wisconsin-Iowa week. It is the battle for the Heartland Trophy. Wisconsin leads by 2 wins in that series right now. And before we even get to that, we're going to have Patrick Vint from Blackheart Gold Pants, our SB Nation cousins, who cover the Iowa Hawkeyes and Iowa Athletics. They will stop on by. Patrick will, at least. Maybe we'll have Adam Jacoby as well at 8:35. Big news real quick as we wait for the Polish rifle, Scott Wisniewski, to join. 2 big recruits that come out of the state of Arizona committed verbally to the Wisconsin Badgers. You're looking at one of the top defensive tackles, Garrett Rand. Garrett is a 4-star talent out of Scottsdale. I think he's out of Scottsdale. Let me take a look real quick. But you also have Caden Lyles is actually out of Scottsdale, Arizona, the 4-star offensive lineman. His brother is the quarterback recruit for the class of 2016. Caden is an offensive lineman, one of the top-rated guards in the nation for the class of 2017. So that is a very good start for them. Garrett Rand out of Arizona as well. 4-star kid guy. I don't know if you guys noticed it, but Rand can bench press about over 500 pounds. I think it's about 560 for that bench. So you're getting 2 fundamental rocks in both your offense and your defensive line for recruiting. It is verbal. You wonder if they'll stick to it, obviously, but Caden Lyles, his brother is a commit, but also his father played for the University of Wisconsin back from 1993 to 1996. So there's a legacy there. And Garrett Rand, he's got a family on his mom's side on there. So we'll see if those hold up. But a good day for Wisconsin recruiting, both 4-star talents and top of their class. And I know Rand is one of the top-rated players in Arizona, if not the top-rated according to most boards. But before we get into talking Wisconsin and Iowa, like I said, we're going to have Patrick Vint come on about 8:35, about a half hour from now, help us preview Wisconsin, help us preview Iowa and what to expect out of the game, which is going to be a slugfest. It's going to be a close one. We'll get into that. But before we even do that, I got the Polish Rifle, Scott Wisniewski, and calling in from sunny Florida. Hopefully, you'll be able to get out of that the hurricane-type weather. It looks like it's going to possibly affect that East Coast, Scotty. But how's the weather been otherwise? How's been the Jacksonville area?
Weather's been fine. Actually, we're not in any hurricane danger, at least right now. I mean, we're leaving tomorrow anyway, but apparently as you move up the coast and hit the Carolinas, they're going to get hit pretty hard in Maryland and Virginia possibly. But we are avoiding that and cutting across the state of Georgia and up through Tennessee. And it can't be any worse than what we had coming down where it rained. Essentially, we drove 20 of the 25 hours of driving. We were in rain. So I don't think anything could be worse than what we had encountered on our trip down. So anyway, that's that. Things have been fabulous down here. We were able, obviously, to view the Packer game, and the Packers go to 3-0, though suffer a few more injuries. Corliss now out for quite some time now, as they put him on the IR. Devontae Adams lasted 3 plays before he re-injured himself. So the injuries continue to pile up, though they're winning. And they go on the road, take on San Francisco, which we'll talk about that later on. But the game itself, Aaron Rodgers looked really good. The offense seeming to – the defense set the tone, played well for the first half. Second half not so good, but the game was comfortably at hand before the defense started to fall apart. My prediction did come true about the receivers finally catching a touchdown for the Kansas City Chiefs. But other than that, they won the game. They're 3-0. Four teams are 3-0. And the Packers, here's an interesting stat. I bet you may or may not have known that. Other than the Patriots, they play every other
Scotty there? What's going on with Scotty? Let's take a quick look. Hold on a second. Let me just take a quick gander there. Scotty, you there, brother? Scotty? All right, let's give him let's have him come back. But Packers, obviously, they improved to 3-0. A solid start for the season. Obviously, like you said, they piled on some injuries, and you're also, you're facing some more injuries on that front. We'll see if we're giving Scotty a quick call. I'm placing that right now, but we'll see what the Packers do. Obviously.
Hi, you have reached the cell phone of Scott Wisniewski.
And Scott.
If you leave a name, number, and a brief message, I'll get back to you.
All right. Well, obviously, we're dealing with some technical difficulties on that. And there he is. There he is. How's it going, brother?
Yeah, great. You know, typical terrible Wi-Fi service in our condo. But unfortunately, that seems to be the one drawback every year of being down here. Anyway, I don't know where the phone dropped. I did mention the injuries. They, again, 3-0, but losing Adams now for probably a couple weeks, losing Corliss for 8 weeks. So they're going to have to continue to try to overcome those things. And I did mention that the Packers, we talked about all the other teams that are 3-0. The Packers actually play more of the remaining 3-0 teams than any other team in the NFL. So the schedule is not going to be easy. But, you know, they got to continue to bank as many wins as they can. And they get everybody healthy. Hopefully in 3-4 weeks, Bulaga's healthy. Eventually Devontae Adams healthy. You got to start getting some of these guys back before you continue to keep losing guys. And they got an opponent coming up who, you know, let's be honest, San Francisco 49ers aren't playing very well. Colin Kaepernick had a terrible game. But the one thing Colin Kaepernick has always done is he's been rough on the Packers. And because they're going to have to figure out a way to keep him in the pocket. The Cardinals kept him in the pocket, and let's be frank, he was awful. So the Packers are hoping for more awful Colin Kaepernick.
That's true. They always seemingly did have their number, the 49ers have, at least over the past few years, but that was with a Jim Harbaugh-led squad, obviously. With the decimation of injuries that you've seen from the 49ers, the fact Patrick Willis retiring, Chris Borland retiring abruptly, Aldon Smith being Aldon Smith, and it's not your average team. The one, like another thing that you mentioned, I mean, yeah, this way Colin Kaepernick, we'll see how he plays. If he plays up there, obviously, we'll see if the read option's even a remote factor in this game. But also just the simple fact that, with this team and the Packers come off that short week, it's a game that many people think the Packers should win, obviously, against a more depleted, less talented 49ers team. But they're facing their injuries on their end. Devontae Adams, obviously, if Steve Houston going to go. I don't know, Scott. I'm intrigued to see how the Packers play, especially on that extra, that less of a night to prepare. And also, you're traveling out west. They are traveling out tomorrow, from what I heard on the radio today from other media members. So they are traveling out to tomorrow. But I mean, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, how is this a trap game for the Packers? Is this a game that where this team could really fall into something where it, you know?
It depends. Look, trap I think trap games are only trap games if you're not a good team or you let things happen that shouldn't. Now, if they lose this game, don't get me wrong, San Francisco could win this game simply for a couple of factors. Number one, like I mentioned, the injuries. Yes, they fought through them, but eventually that takes its toll. They got to try to make sure they can get out of Santa Clara without any more serious injuries. So the injuries and the lack of depth, I mean, they've got one tight end on the roster. So certainly they could run into a numbers issue. That could certainly happen. And they haven't shown that they could stop Colin Kaepernick yet. And Don Capers hasn't shown that he could stop Colin Kaepernick. Other teams have figured it out. We need to see the Packers do that. So certainly they could lose this game. Certainly they could run into a trap. They're the better team. They still have the better roster. But, you know, we'll see how they're able to the Packers may have to make three trips out to the Bay Area. I was looking at their schedule. Their three furthest games, they play at Denver, and then they play at Oakland and at San Francisco. The Super Bowl is also held in Santa Clara. So if the season goes the way the Packers want it to, they won't mind making that third trip out to the Bay Area in early February. But this is their longest, this one and, of course, the Oakland game are their longest road trips of the season. So we'll see how they're able to handle that. You mentioned the day. But, you know, I think the Packers as an organization are used to stuff like that. They've been a premier franchise, Aaron Rodgers and this team, since Aaron Rodgers' second year as a starter. They play national televised games. They do the Monday night and then have to play on Sunday. I mean, I think they'll be okay from that standpoint, but the injuries do concern me. And, you know, I think when you look at it, it's some of those things where, as I mentioned, without being redundant, they'll eventually catch up to them if they don't start getting some of these guys healthy soon. So we'll see. But, yeah, other than that, you know, what does San Francisco have? Vernon Davis is questionable. He may not play. Torrey Smith may not play. So that leaves an Anquan Boldin and Carlos Hyde and a little bit of Reggie Bush, who's also been a little banged up. So, you know, some of the weapons on this team, some of the offensive weapons for San Francisco, they've had their share of injuries too. So, again, that should mitigate some of the injuries the Packers are dealing with.
Yeah. And going back to the game real quick, obviously, we get a chance to review it quick, but let's do a quick rewind. Aaron Rodgers, yeah. 5 touchdown passes, offense still churning, defense looking sharp for the most part up until late when the garbage time started arriving. Your thoughts, just a quick recap. We'll start our offense first. Obviously, Aaron Rodgers, best player in the league, but also the fact that, and maybe this is more of a joke, I don't know if you heard about the Pro Football Focus initially grading him out as a negative 0.8 and giving him a quote-unquote F, but yet he's the NFC Player of the Week. And your thoughts on his performance? Obviously, he looked quite solid.
Wait, are we talking about before the draft? That's what he graded out at?
No, they're talking about, like, the grade for the game.
Oh, that's stupid. That's stupid.
They upgraded to 0.7 to clear, like, or maybe a day or so ago. I don't pay attention to the Pro Football Focus. I don't have a subscription or anything, or I don't really pay attention to the grade.
I don't either. But is it written by the same people who write The Onion? Like, no, like, seriously, like, I mean, I honestly don't even want to give it that much pub if that's how ridiculous of a publication is. I don't understand the basis of anything like that. Now, I did read this week because obviously it was Aaron Rodgers versus Alex Smith, so it was nice to go back and read some of the scouts, most of which, and I'll give three of them credit because they put their name on their evaluations, their pre-draft evaluations of Aaron Rodgers. Of course, most scouts, like they always are cowards, and they go unnamed, and they blast people before they get drafted and say really stupid, trollish kind of stuff, and then don't ever put a name to it so they can't ever be held accountable to their stupidity. But I remember reading some of that this week and chuckling a little bit at some of the pre-draft evaluation of Aaron Rodgers. But as far as how anybody could have watched that game and graded him that, I mean, was it his best game ever? No, heck no. I mean, did he make a couple mistakes? He had a ball that should have been picked. He made a couple of bad throws. But it was, at the very least, you know, a B-. I don't understand, like, I guess I have no idea what they could have been thinking. But aside from that, offensively, Aaron Rodgers was great. He was without Devontae Adams. James Jones continues to be a nice safety blanket, which I knew was exactly what was going to happen when they signed him, and it's proven to be a good signing. A little bit concerned. Lacy was really unable to get on track. Still, obviously, it hurts. I mean, he played through that injury, but he wasn't at 100%, so the running game wasn't where it should have been. Rodgers showed some great escapability. It just continues to amaze me that people didn't think he was athletic enough to you know, and they were some of the knocks on him in the pre-draft evaluation was he panics and he can't get out of trouble and he can't create his own plays, which, again, obviously we've seen that's not the case. But offensively, I would have liked to see them be more effective running the ball. But, again, you know, Lacy's banged up, and I think they're going to try to establish the run. I think they want to run more than they did and run more effectively than they did on Monday. But, you know, the game plan and the game as it's unfolding sometimes dictates what you do. And they had to pass a little bit more than I think they would have wanted to. But I thought offensively they played fine. I mean, they certainly scored enough points.
Absolutely. And so that's what, you know, yeah, obviously they went up big. And are you concerned at all with the defensive performance? Are you concerned with the way they – and obviously the Chiefs, you know, it was their time, due time at – and the Packers were up big when they started going on that scoring spree. Are you worried at all? Or, I mean, was it just – I mean, the Packers' defense was pretty dominant throughout the entire game up until Kansas City put up some points like that.
I think there's got to be worry. They're a average defense at best, and they need the offense to get ahead to take teams out of their game plan. I think the defense still scares me in a game where if there's a game that's going to happen this year, and you know there's going to be a couple, it's the NFL, where the offense can't get untracked. You know, and it's unlike the Badgers, where if the offense is struggling, I believe the Badgers defense can keep a team in a game for three and a half quarters and wait for the offense to come along. The Packer defense can't do that. You know, they need the Packers offense to get up on teams and take teams out of their rhythm and take them out of their game plan. And then the defense looks decent. You know, I think the young secondary players have played well. I think Clay Matthews continues to be a beast. And I was happy with the pass rush. I thought that was really good. But they still can give up, you know, big plays soft over the middle. And, I think that you'll see that against certain teams. Again, maybe not so much against the Niners with an injured Vernon Davis and a Torrey Smith. I do like the listen, this defense can be better than I think they are if they continue to get a constant pass rush like they did against Kansas City. If you can get six sacks, even if you don't get six sacks, but you can get five, six, seven, eight hurries, then I think that that's going to cover up a lot of the deficiencies on this team. And we've said that for years, and it seems like a simple formula, right? Get pressure on the quarterback, and everybody goes, oh, you're just being so simplistic. But isn't that what the recipe was on Monday? They put pressure on Alex Smith, and they were able to get to him a couple times and end some drives. That being said, you know, Jamal Charles is a fantastic ball player. Travis Kelce is a good young tight end. Jeremy Maclin had some great seasons in Philadelphia. Finally, a touchdown for a wide receiver, as I projected. I'm trying to combine two words. Projected last week, but you figured that was going to happen. Really, that offense, though, for Kansas City, you know, they laugh and they joke about Alex Smith being the king of checkdowns, but that's really what he's been. That's why they haven't been able to complete touchdown passes to wide receivers for the last 18 and a half games until Monday, because he always checks down and picks the easy route and doesn't challenge teams downfield. So am I worried about a few of the big plays? No, it was garbage time. Am I worried overall? Yes. I'm worried about the defense if they can't put pressure on a quarterback. And I still worry about this defense when they play a mobile quarterback. I know they did fine enough against Russell Wilson. If they can shut down Colin Kaepernick, again, not because Kaepernick's great, because he's not, but he's been great against the Packers. If they can exercise that demon, maybe I'll change my opinion a little bit.
One nice thing, they held Jamal Charles. A lot of people, obviously, you go through a gamut of really talented running backs the first four games of the season, first three for sure, where you had Matt Forte, Marshawn Lynch, Jamal Charles. Only held them to 49 yards, 11 carries, three touchdowns, yes, but held them to under 100 yards there. Now they go on to face a San Francisco team without Frank Gore, longtime 49er who's now with Indianapolis Colts. But you're looking at Carlos Hyde, who many Badger fans know from his days at Ohio State, a very explosive runner. And you're going up against a gamut. Yeah, definitely. I like him, too. Very good back, and it'll be another challenge for the defense.
Yeah, I think so. But, again, you take a team out of that rhythm by scoring every time you get the ball. So you get a 10-point lead early, 14-point lead, whatever it is. Now teams will be less likely to run the ball, and they'll force the ball downfield, hence staying in the pocket longer, hence building up your pass rush and getting some sacks and some hurries. So, again, the game plan, to me, continues to be the same. I think the Packers' offense, I think Aaron Rodgers has more pressure on him than any other player in the NFL. And I know it's going to sound silly, but he's a great quarterback. So you're going to say, well, why would he have pressure on him? He's great. He's one of the top three quarterbacks in the league. But he knows that his offense, they have to score every time out there almost to set the pace, especially early, jump on teams early. He's top receiver, Jordy Nelson, out. His what should be his number two receiver now, Devontae Adams, out. Two banged up running backs and no depth at tight end. But yet he's going to go out there on Sunday and say, we got to score, you know, two or three times in our first four possessions to set the tempo and make it easier on our defense. It's a lot of pressure. But yet, you know what? He still handles it. He doesn't melt under pressure, again, like some of the unnamed scouts figured he would once he got to the NFL. What I love about him is that, you know, there was a comparison to Michael Jordan. You know, I don't know if you heard that. James Jones referred to him as a Michael Jordan. I'll tell you where he's similar to Michael Jordan. He makes the game look easy, okay? Makes the game look easy every time he's out there. He does these phenomenal things. He makes it look easy. I'll tell you another reason why he's like Michael Jordan. He plays with that chip on his shoulder. Michael Jordan was going to prove everybody wrong because they said he was never going to be an NBA player and he was never going to be a star. Aaron Rodgers is proving everybody wrong. Now, is he Michael Jordan? No. Michael Jordan's got six rings. Aaron Rodgers wins a couple more Super Bowls. He's in that realm. You can mention him in that same lexicon as Michael Jordan. Right now, he's the best player in the NFL. If I had to pick one player to win me a game, it would be him. But I'm not ready to call him MJ yet. But I can understand the comparisons for sure.
Yeah, and it's really interesting to see. I think from what it sounded like, Bleacher Report had an article saying Tolzien said the same thing, watching Jordan in his prime. Yeah, and I get, yeah, obviously the way he makes it look easy, but I'll agree with you there with the simple fact that, you know, the championship part is much less to be desired, at least yet. But we'll see what they do. And let me ask you a hypothetical before we kind of go to the NFL. It's about 8:23, just as an FYI for everyone. In about 12 minutes, we'll have Patrick Vint from Blackheart Gold Pants helping us preview Wisconsin and Iowa for the battle for the Heartland Trophy and a key Big Ten West division matchup, with the winner gaining a lot of momentum and essentially a game and a half lead in the Big Ten West division standings. He'll be joining us in about 12 minutes. But with the Packers' schedule, Scotty, when you have when you look at their schedule, and do you think this team has a chance in terms of wins? Let's play a quick game. Do you think they can get 14 wins this season?
If they can manage to not have any more serious injuries, I still think their ceiling's 13. I think that there's, you know, Denver is going to be tough in Denver. Minnesota, you know, Detroit doesn't look as tough as I thought they were. So I guess maybe, but you know, games at Carolina, that's a tough one yet too. They have to deal with, Arizona. I mean, I know it's in Green Bay, but wouldn't that be interesting? You know, somebody painted a picture of, now obviously I don't think either team is going to be at that position, but where they saw two 14-1 teams playing at Lambeau that in week 16, but game 15. Now tell me that wouldn't be interesting. But I don't think either team's going to get there. I think the Packers are a 13-3 team, but could they win 14? Yeah, absolutely. Look, if I think you can win 13, then certainly you're able to win 14. Obviously, you just have to have a break here and there go your way. But I think, you know, 12, 13, 14, 14 on the top end, you know, 11 on the low end, again, barring any major injury, division winner, yes. Number one seed, likely. Again, that Arizona game in Green Bay is going to be a doozy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you look at the schedule. Obviously, 49ers are tough, but, you know, you have a decent Rams team. Granted, they lost to the Redskins. You have the Chargers with Melvin Gordon. Like I said.
Very injured Charger team. I mean, they're missing four starting offensive linemen. And you know, some of the injuries not as serious, but as of right now, they're missing some players. Like, that's tough. I'll tell you what, I'd be more afraid. I can't believe I'm saying it, but I'm saying it. The team that scares me, other than, I said, Denver and Arizona, maybe Carolina, that game in Oakland, because that's another travel game. Oakland's looking a little bit better. I mean, I know they're still the Raiders. We'll see, but who else is scary on this, you know? I mean, St. Louis is Jekyll and Hyde. Their defense is stellar. Their offense hasn't been able to muster anything. Dallas, you know, Romo should be back, or could be. I shouldn't say should be. Could be back when that don't know if Dez will be back yet. But if they got their weapons, I don't think you can count out Dallas either.
Yeah. Oh, no, absolutely. Dallas, and depends on when Romo really gets back. And we all know how those type of injuries that he has goes. But, yeah, I mean, I think the big one, I mean, obviously the Broncos at Denver on November 1st after they come off their bye. But you mentioned the Panthers. I mean, those are two back-to-back crazy games on the road. And then, you know, the Cardinals, like you said, the Cardinals, that's the big one. We'll see what that defense does. And obviously, you have kind of a resurgent Larry Fitzgerald. Carson Palmer's back.
Oh, my goodness. Let me tell you something. Okay, so we knew it that when we talked at the beginning of the year, everybody said, oh, the Cardinals have a good defense. We knew that. That was a given. They lead the league right now in points scored. And I know the defense sets some of that up. I think they've got like four defensive touchdowns already. But Larry Fitzgerald has five touchdowns. And last year he looked like a player on the downside of his career. Floyd and Brown have been banged up. If they get those guys back, you got a three-headed monster there. Their top running back, Ellington's been hurt, and they've managed to take retreads like Chris Johnson and the other Johnson, the rookie, and was able to have cobbled together a pretty good running game. So it gives you a lot of different weapons. And Carson Palmer, man, I mean, he's a better player later in his career, I think, than he was some of the seasons in the beginning of his career, even though he had some good ones with Cincinnati. His biggest bugaboo has been the injuries over the last few years. But if he can stay healthy and upright, he's a viable, legitimate quarterback for a team that's got a lot of weapons and one of the top defenses in football.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Any surprises from last week and coming up for this week that let's talk real quick. We got about seven minutes before Patrick joins us,
I'll give you one right now. Yeah, I'll give you one right now. And I know they're playing, and I'm outside now. I was watching the game before that. Baltimore was winning 7-3. Don't know what they're doing right now. But Baltimore being 0-3 is a surprise. I don't think a lot of people thought that was going to happen. The injuries, think about the great – Tony Romo's out for a while. Ben Roethlisberger got hurt last week. He's out for a while. We don't know what's going on with Drew Brees and his injuries. Those are some top-notch, top-10 quarterbacks. Let me tell you what the biggest surprise, though. You know, we focus on the negatives and 0-3 Baltimore and 0-3 Detroit. How about Atlanta? I understand that Dallas did not have Romo, but Atlanta ran roughshod over Dallas last week to go to 3-0. And their team, like, they remind me a little bit of that Atlanta team that the as far as how they're playing early on, that the Packers ended up upsetting on the road to their Super Bowl win. But they're definitely a team that's looking really good early on. So I think, to me, that's the biggest surprise. I mean, you know, the Patriots aren't a surprise. Once we knew Brady was playing, we knew that they'd be firing on all cylinders at the beginning of the year. But I think for Atlanta to be doing what they're doing has been the biggest surprise as far as teams that are overachieving or maybe not overachieving, but overachieving to where we thought they were going to be.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's, I don't know. I'm intrigued to see what happens this week coming up. And I'm just looking at what's going on for Sunday, and let's take a look. Let's see.
Well, I'll tell you what. The NFC East is interesting to me because the Cowboys with their injuries are 2-1. Even though Philly, Washington, and the Giants haven't played well, that division's still very much wide open. And Philly plays Washington in a big NFC East battle this week. You have your first London game as the Miami Dolphins are traveling over to London in what should be a doozy. How about the Buffalo Bills? I mean, are you surprised by how good the Buffalo Bills looked this week or how bad Miami looked or both? I mean, is Miami kind of teasing everybody again as they were going to be the hot pick and a team that was going to make a playoff run? And it certainly looks – not certainly. It's definitely New England 1, Buffalo 2 in that division, and the Jets 3, and the Dolphins right now looking like the worst team in that division.
Yeah, I mean, I've bought into Rex Ryan and his defense. I mean, if he – you've seen what Rex Ryan's defenses can do through his time at Baltimore – with New York, the Jets on that end, and then dealing with looking at what he's doing in Buffalo, and even within the first few games, and yeah, they got torn apart by New England a week earlier, but Buffalo can look the part, and we'll see. I think with that, Buffalo, based off what's happened, I mean, Joe Philbin's job's got to be in jeopardy, the former Packers offensive coordinator.
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, hot seat is getting toastier by the game. And, everyone's been wanting to talk about Ryan Tannehill and will he take the next steps? And obviously, just looking at some of these stats real quick, it's not really great. And so, I mean, let's take a look at it right now. They're 1-2 on the season. And if my computer would actually load, which has been tons of fun so far today, gotta love technology. But Tannehill completed about 61% of his over 61% of his passes, only 5 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. And you look at the rush
has gotten carved up, and that and the young receivers haven't done what they thought. I mean, Rishard Matthews has been good, but the two kids, Landry, the kids that they drafted high, are yet to kind of show up. And while you're looking that up, I just wanted to also point out, because I happened to watch the Tennessee game in its entirety, Tennessee dribbled away a win against the Colts and really were about 1 or 2 plays away from putting the Colts at 0-3, which, again, what was a chic Super Bowl pick for a lot of teams, they almost started out 0-3. And as you've probably heard ad nauseum, only 3 teams that started 0-3 have made the playoffs since like 1988 or whatever it was. So that could have definitely put them in a rough spot, but they were able to pull a victory out of the jaws of defeat, so to speak. But that would have been another surprise. If they would have started out 0-3 with Andrew Luck playing as poorly as he was, I think that would have been probably the biggest surprise in the league.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Anything else? We're going to have Patrick Vint from Blackheart Gold Pants coming on in just a little bit. He's also a wrestling fan too, Scotty, so I'm sure we're going to lace some wrestling references around with Wisconsin, Iowa. Anything else before we close out the NFL?
No. I think if we can move on, we'll talk some college and maybe finish with a little bit of baseball talk.
Yeah, sounds good, guys. We're going to come back, preview Iowa and Wisconsin. Before we do that, got a chance to interview Darius Hillary, Wisconsin's shutdown redshirt senior cornerback, talking about the Wisconsin-Iowa rivalry, talking about what he needs to do, what the secondary will face, and what they need to do to beat the Hawkeyes. So what we'll do is take a quick break, play that, come back, and preview the game. This is Kielbasa Kings Sports Extravaganza, brought to you by Bucky's Fifth Quarter.
I would say physicality level kind of amps up a little more, and it's not so much running up the score of games. You got have to be ready for a 4-quarter game, so I definitely think we'll be ready for that.
Will practice be different this week, do you think, than practices leading up to this week?
It might be a little different. you know, you never take any opponent lightly. You know, we want to come out and practice hard every day, but intensity level might rise a little bit, you know, seeing as how this is a trophy game and my first Big Ten game, but I'm excited for it.
You remember last year's game?
Yeah.
What stands out to you?
I mean, they're just a good team that are going to give you their best shot for four quarters, so we're ready for the opportunity.
What do you remember from 2 years ago, though?
From 2 years ago? Yeah, I remember I got my first interception 2 years ago with that game, and it was a great experience, and I'm looking to have a good game this weekend.
Do you still remember the coverage and the situation?
Yeah, I still remember the situation, everything, you know. Cover three, I kind of baited the quarterback a little bit into throwing the deep ball because I sat on something short, just ran back and fell right under the ball, and yeah.
Did you think you'd have more by now after that first one?
I mean, it's not something that I always think about. You just have to be able to make a play when it comes your way, so it's not like I'm every week like, oh man, like I don't have a pick, I need another one or something like that. It's just you have to be able to make the plays when it comes your way.
Thanks.
Yes, sir.
From your vantage point, what's impressive most about Chris Orr coming in as a true freshman? Because it doesn't seem like there are many freshmen that can play.
Yeah, he's picked up this game pretty well. You know, Leon, Joe Schobert, Vince Beagle, and all those guys have kind of taken him under their wing and have showed him the ropes. But I definitely think, you know, he's come in with a chip on his shoulder. Like, you know, I can play with these guys, which he can. He's done an amazing job thus far. And, you know, I think he'll continue to do that for us.
Have you ever looked at the Heartland Trophy?
Yeah. It's taken a couple guys, too. It's pretty heavy. But it's a cool experience if you have the opportunity to after a big game.
I'm sure that's something you guys talk about a lot is having all three trophies and at the same time. Is that on your mind at all as you start?
Not necessarily. We don't really talk about it that much. You know, it's just, you know, we want to come out with the goal and mindset to win a football game. And, you know, with it being a trophy week or trophy game, that makes it that much more special. Yeah.
I was a physical team, you're a physical corner. How much do you look forward to a matchup like this?
We definitely look forward to it. You know, it's going to be a four-quarter game, kind of smash-mouth football. You know, that's what both programs are known for, and I'm just excited for the opportunity.
When it comes to, you know, talking about Chris Orr and some of the younger players, T.J. Edwards, the first game experience and during a trophy game, like what advice do you give them? Is it just same old stuff, different week, or how do you guys prepare?
I definitely say don't make it bigger than what it is. You know, continue to play your style of football and continue to do what we do, and that's just, you know, play our game, play Badger football. You know, you can't make it bigger than what it is because then you can kind of get outside of yourself or what you're doing, and that might affect you. So I definitely say, you know, just keep doing what you're doing, study film, you know, get up with your coaches, ask as many questions as you can, and embrace your role on this team.
And guys, that was senior cornerback Darius Hillary, one of the two veteran cornerbacks for the Wisconsin Badgers, who will have to face a tandem of wide receivers Saturday morning into Saturday afternoon at Camp Randall Stadium, taking on Tavon Smith, and then also, if I'm not mistaken, Matt Vanderberg, so who has over 24 catches on the year. And so to help us preview the Wisconsin Badgers and the Iowa Hawkeyes, and great guy, I had a chance to talk with him on their podcast last year. Had a lot of wrestling references, and I'm hoping to duplicate that as I'm doing we're both doing a double shot this tonight, going back to back on each other's podcast. We got Patrick Vint here, and how you doing, my friend? And how are you feeling heading into this game with the Badgers and the Hawkeyes?
Boy, it takes something for a Wisconsin fan to call an Iowa fan a friend 3 days before kickoff. But no, I'm doing good. It's been a surprisingly pleasant year so far for Iowa football, and that makes everything a little bit better.
Now, Patrick, you know, Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin, to me, any one of those three teams I thought could win the West. So this is obviously a big early season game. Educate some of our fans about this version, this year's version of the Hawkeyes, things to look at, their strengths, and things maybe that they don't do as well that they'd like to improve here early on.
Well, if you're going to talk about Iowa in 2015, you kind of have to start with the changes in kind of the scheme that they're using at this point. They went back to the drawing board after last year. They lost at Wisconsin, or to Wisconsin, excuse me, in the penultimate game. Blew a big lead against Nebraska late and then got blown out in a bowl game against Tennessee. And they kind of threw everything out and started all over from scratch. They have revamped the special teams. They've revamped the running offense more than anything else. They're now kind of running a bit of Wisconsin's game. It used to be Iowa would run almost exclusively outside and inside zone, and is now running power, running ISOs, running counters. They're doing just about everything that you could in the running game. And that's all in service of C.J. Beathard, who's the new quarterback and who has been kind of a revelation. He's got a far better arm than Jake Rudock ever had, and that's really opened up a lot of the offense, not just downfield, but also the quick pass game that Greg Davis has wanted to run now for 4 years finally seems to be working. If you can stop Beathard, you probably have a pretty good chance of beating Iowa, but no one's done it yet. He runs real well when he has to. They don't have a whole lot of designed run plays for him, but he does scramble particularly well. Use that to beat Iowa State almost by itself. The running game, as always at Iowa, is important, but also is always hindered by injuries. And sure enough, we got a couple of guys dinged up. But they've been pretty effective running the ball, and Beathard has done a nice job of evening things out.
We're here with Patrick Vint from Blackheart Gold Pants, our SB Nation cousins, as the Iowa Hawkeyes look to improve to 5-0 on the season, taking on the Wisconsin Badgers. Last time they did that, by the way, fun little note from the game notes, which I study during my lunch breaks because I'm bored. You're looking at since 2009. And that same year is the year that they came to Camp Randall and won 20-10. I still remember that. That was 2009 when they're still Scott Tolzien and Kurt Phillips, the immortal Kurt Phillips, as I'll refer to as, when they were switching off at quarterback at that time. And, you know, you mentioned some of the offensive weapons. You know, and C.J. Beathard, and I guess, you know, you said he's a revelation, but who are the other weapons on that offense that obviously you have Jordan Canceri, who's racking up some big yards. Iowa's rushing offense, nearly 200 yards per game on the ground, coupled that with that passing game. They're putting up some big numbers offensively. Who should Badger fans know about heading into Saturday's game?
It's kind of a three-headed beast for this week. Sure enough, Beathard. You mentioned Canceri. He was actually the backup at the beginning of the year. Has been remarkably effective with the would-be starter LeSean Daniels kind of dinged up ever since the first half of the Iowa State game. Canceri's really taken over. He's a fifth-year senior. He's experienced. He's quick. He's kind of a smaller back than Iowa was used to, and he does have some problems fumbling, but he's been remarkably effective. And then Matt Vandenberg, who was a potential walk-on receiver who actually got a scholarship in August camp as a freshman and then ended up playing as a true freshman, has really come through this year as a junior. He's the you know, consummate Iowa possession receiver, catches everything that's near him, has been pretty effective in the screen game, and has been able to kind of pull linebackers and secondary away from the line of scrimmage by being so. Tavon Smith would normally be their number one receiver, but he's got a sprained knee and probably won't play Saturday. And so I would expect even more Vandenberg than usual.
Oh, wow.
Now, I know that you and other Iowa fans have seen your fair share of Wisconsin over the last few years, and it's a team that used to, you know, be a team that you had to stop the run, and the pass was an afterthought. And this year's team, and I think it's defense first, then they throw the ball, and then they're trying to still establish the run. So defensively for the Hawkeyes, looking at the running game, not as big of a threat as in the past, and maybe Joel Stave being a little bit more of a threat, does that play into the hands of the Hawkeyes a little bit more than in the past years, or are they more well-balanced that doesn't matter as much?
It's a pretty balanced defense. I would say that they're probably a little bit stronger against the pass than the run. They've got a deep and experienced secondary. Desmond King, who plays as their top cornerback has been fantastic throughout the first month of the season. And their free safety, Jordan Lomax, is a senior who's kind of the leader of the entire unit. Their biggest problem has been defensive end Drew Ott is a great pass rusher, but he's also been injured. He had a dislocated, I think, elbow during the Iowa State game and has been kind of 50-50 on every game since. Without him, they haven't gotten much of a pass rush. And so the concern for Iowa obviously has to be letting Stavi drop back and throw the ball. And so I would expect maybe a little bit more blitzing than you're used to seeing from Iowa. They have shown an ability to do that when they need to. But I'm with you. I think the game is going to probably be decided in large part between Iowa's offense and Wisconsin's defense, given just how strong the Badgers have been. And then, you know, whatever Wisconsin can generate on offense might be enough to get by if Iowa can't get much going.
Here with Patrick Vint from Blackheart Gold Pants. Here on Bucky's Fifth Quarter and the Kielbasa King Sports Extravaganza. And you know, with that, there's been, if I'm not mistaken, Patrick, am I correct to hear that Kirk Ferentz has thrown a couple of fake field goals, fake punts? How have special teams been with this mad scientist known as Kirk Ferentz? Is this part of that rebuilding, that going back to the chalkboard you mentioned earlier?
You're talking about master of fakes, Kirk Ferentz. Yeah, he has run two fake field goals so far this year, both of them unsuccessful, both of them widely praised by the fan base because it's the first time I've seen anything like that from him, probably in 15 years. So they've run two fake field goals. They've gone to the kind of new age shield punt, which I think has been very beneficial for them, although they did have one blocked against Pitt. They've been running rugby punts occasionally when they've got a long one to kick. They've got a kicker named Marshall Kane who kicked a 57-yard field goal to beat Pitt. He's one of probably the most effective offensive weapons they've got, frankly. He's a really good deep punter and a great place kicker. And I think they're really trying to take advantage of that. Now, they're still Iowa, so you're still not going to see a whole lot in the return game. They're pretty conservative on that front. But it goes back, you're right, to them kind of going back to the drawing board with almost everything, and especially let them down a lot last year. The Nebraska loss was pretty much solely because they gave up two long punt returns in the fourth quarter and let the defense try to defend a short field. And I think that was kind of the impetus behind the wholesale changes, and still most of them are on the special team side.
Patrick, let me ask you a little bit about Kirk Ferentz. Here's a guy who's been – his tenure is amazing, and people forget about sometimes how long he's been there. And I think sometimes when coaches are at a school as long as he's been, unless it's a, you know, somebody winning national championships, I think sometimes they get taken for granted. What does the Iowa fan base feel about him? Does he get unfairly criticized sometimes, being an insider like you and being there in Iowa? Or is he loved and cherished throughout the state?
I wouldn't say he's loved and cherished. I don't know if he ever really has been. He's not loved on the same plane as a guy like Hayden Fry was. He's widely respected. Everybody kind of appreciates his demeanor. He's pretty soft-spoken. He's, his teams are always kind of hardworking. The kind of teams that Iowa fans can get behind, and I think that fans generally appreciate that. I wouldn't say he's unfairly criticized. I think that there have been times in the last few years, especially last season and in 2012, where they didn't really want to adapt to the game as it's played today, and as a result really kind of suffered. But he's even come out and said he's a new Kirk this year. And everybody's happy to see him. And frankly, I think everybody would be happy to keep him around if they continue to play like they're playing now, if they continue to look like they're innovating. They built a new football facility over the last couple of years. And Ferentz has admitted he spent probably too much time out fundraising and working on the facility and not enough time coaching. And I think that probably played into it. But if they can keep putting it together like they are, I don't think you'll hear too much from Iowa fans negative about old Kirk.
Here with Patrick Vint from Blackheart Gold Pants. here on Bucky's fifth quarter. And obviously, I mean, just some fun stats between both teams. I mean, you're looking at the fact that Iowa's defense only allows 84 rushing yards per game. You have the fact that Iowa's defense only, their front seven only holds opponents to 2.65 yards per touch, which is a very impressive. And just looking at I'm looking at this, Patrick, the one note, and I sent this off to one of your fine writers at Blackheart Gold Pants with Ross, saying one matchup to note is Iowa's big, you know, they lead the Big Ten in third down conversions and red zone offense. Wisconsin only allows just under 32% on third down conversions, but they lead the conference in red zone defense. In your opinion, what are the main keys to the game? Well, maybe one on each side with offense and defense. And what's your prediction for the game?
I think if Iowa is able to effectively run the ball, I think they've got a fighting chance on the offensive side at the very least. Any game between Iowa and Wisconsin is going to probably come down to something in the trenches. Iowa has shown an ability to throw the ball 40 times. They did it against Pitt. I think they kind of accepted that they were going to get pressured by Pitt's defense and adjusted accordingly. But I don't think that Iowa's going to come out and throw the ball 45 times against Wisconsin. I do think they're going to try to get the ball between the tackles, and especially if you're looking for a point where it's really going to be important. I think Iowa's interior line against Wisconsin's defensive front is going to be probably the most important part of Iowa actually being able to do something on offense. On the defensive side, I think it comes down to whether or not they can get pressure on Stavi, because if he's able to take 4 or 5 seconds to find a receiver, he's going to find one. And I think it's difficult to beat Wisconsin if they can throw the ball like they have against some of their more recent opponents. So I think the pass rush is important. And obviously if they can get Odd in the game and get him to the quarterback, it's going to change things pretty considerably for them. For the first time in years, I'm not that concerned about Wisconsin's running game. But I do think that Stavi could win this thing if given enough time. And my prediction for the night, I'm oddly confident in Iowa for the first time in quite some time. I think Iowa probably goes into Camp Randall and wins this thing about 28-24.
It's going to be a close one. It's going to be a close one. I'm thinking 21-13. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it might even be 21-20. It's going to be close. It's going to be it's going to be within the touchdown. You know, it's going to be really. I'm really interested in seeing how this game plays out. Especially, I mean, with that, I think Beathard's going to be that wild card. And just if he can, his mobility, if he can create the plays, if he can scramble, if Wisconsin over, that's a big thing. Wisconsin over pursues with that defense, and you have Schobert and Beagle that are leading the league total for a tandem with tackles for loss. I mean, if he can escape them, he's shown that he can with other defenses. It's going to be a long day for Wisconsin. It's going to be quite the interesting matchup.
Yep. No, I agree completely. If Wisconsin starts getting too aggressive and we're pursuing almost up running lanes, he'll certainly take advantage of them. And he's kind of sneaky fast. He can kind of turn it on when he needs to, although it looks like someone should be catching him real fast. They don't ever seem to. So, no, I agree completely. Wisconsin stay home and stay in their lanes if they're going to try to keep this keep Beathard in the pocket and keep Iowa throwing.
Well, Patrick, it's been great having you on. I'm looking forward to talking to you in just a little bit over with you guys. Is it going to be you and Adam? Are we going to have some fun talking some Ric Flair and some NXT and some maybe I'll try to get some Tyler Breeze references going on in there?
So we'll queue up all the dusty roads you want.
Awesome.
See you in a few minutes.
Awesome. Thanks, Patrick. Guys, Patrick Vint, Blackheart Gold Pants. Make sure you go to check out their website, obviously one of the great websites on SB Nation. What we'll do now, we'll take one more quick break. We'll come back, wrap up the show. This is the Kielbasa King Sports Extravaganza brought to you by Bucky's fifth quarter. Hey, guys. That was Patrick Vint from Blackheart Gold Pants here on Bucky's Fifth Quarter, the Kielbasa Kings Sports Extravaganza. Make sure you guys follow him on Twitter at HS_BHGP. And, of course, follow us on Twitter at B5Q at Kielbasa Kings WI. For Scotty at ScottWisnusk2 and me, Jake Coco, KOCO. B5Q. And you know, before we transition over to baseball real quick, just to make sure you guys know, I talked about it at the beginning of the show, Wisconsin got some big time recruits, commitments, verbal commitments, obviously. Today you're looking at defensive tackle Garrett Rand, the Chandler, Arizona 4-star recruit, committed earlier today, and even later today you saw a legacy recruit, 4-star class of 2017 offensive lineman Caden Lyles, brother of Kare Lyles, who's a 2016 commit for Wisconsin at quarterback. Caden is a 300-pound offensive lineman, one of the top five guards, according to Scout, 24/7 Sports, Rivals. It is a very great pickup for Wisconsin on that end. And Wisconsin now, according to many of the recruiting posts you're looking at services, you're looking them top 25, obviously very much – very, very much early in the game, but the fact that they're putting together a very solid class is a solid sign. And Scott, let me just say too, I mean, a lot of people came in wondering if Paul Chris could recruit, and in his first recruiting class, he's making a pretty big statement so far.
Yeah, we'll see how it pans out. You know how I feel about a lot of the
I know you do.
But there'll be a top 25 class, and then they'll be like fifth or sixth in the Big Ten, and then they'll still perform better than half of the Big Ten schools that are ranked ahead of them. I hope the kids turn out to be good ball players and fit the scheme. Speaking of which, before we get into baseball, we have like 5 or 6 minutes left. I'll give you a quick prediction. I'm picking Iowa 23-21. I'm picking the Packers 27-24. Those are my two predictions for this weekend, because I knew we'd get to them at some point. So
yeah, sorry about that. You're looking at – I said 21-17 in a Q&A I did with Blackheart Gold Pants earlier this week. But I plan on I may change that. I may go 21-20. I think Wisconsin just somehow pulls it out. I think the defense can hold better. And the big thing that Patrick knows, if – Tavon Smith is actually out for that game. He is their deep threat. He averages almost 20 yards per catch. Vandenberg, he's averaging less than 10 yards per catch, and he's a wide receiver. They do a lot of screens. You'll see a lot of two tight end sets, I formation, like what Patrick had said, a lot of either 21, 12, or even 11 personnel where you have a twins left, twins right, and a look, and they utilize two tight ends nicely as well. So I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be a tough game. I think it can go either way. If Clement was in, I think Wisconsin would win, but hands down. But we'll see if the Badgers can meet the challenge and then head into Lincoln at 4-1. So heading to baseball, obviously, we don't have we're winding down the show. But let's talk some baseball. Obviously, we talked about the Brewers with their new GM last week.
And they've got the five rookie starters, and they're pretty much just playing to evaluate for next year. Braun hasn't played in 2 weeks. He's going to have back surgery. I think he's done for the year, obviously. Okay. So you look at the National League, the Mets have won a division, the Cardinals and the Dodgers. Now, the Mets and Dodgers are still jockeying for the number two spot for home field for later in the playoffs. Pirates and Cubs are in the wild card. Pirates with a two-game lead with three games to go. The Brewers could affect positively or negatively because they play the Cubs to end the year. But I still think the Pirates will hold on and host that wild card game. The American League is a little more interesting. Toronto chasing Kansas City. They own the tiebreaker. They're a game back for the number one seed, but Toronto's won it. Kansas City's won it. Texas looks like they're going to win it. How about that? I made that pick at the beginning of the year, and everybody thought I was nuts for picking Texas. But the wild cards, that's where it gets interesting. The Yankees with a 2.5-game lead. Then the Angels, who have just a slim half-game lead over Houston. Houston collapsing a little, but that's a sign of a young team. You know, obviously, they'll get some veterans in the offseason. They're a team that's going to be around for quite a while, but could miss out on the postseason. Out of those teams, I'm telling you, I think that my early prediction is we're going to see a Toronto Toronto's World Series, and I think it's going to be Toronto against Pittsburgh. I think the loss of Molina, I know he thinks he's going to be ready for the postseason. I think that hurts the Cardinals. I don't know why I'm feeling Pittsburgh this year, and Toronto has just been off the charts since they went and made the trade to get Tulowitzki and some of the other players there. Kansas City has been just kind of idling over the course of the last month because they had everything wrapped up kind of early. But that's early, and we're going to talk more in depth about the postseason when it starts. By the time we talk next week, we'll be already into the AL Divisional Series, likely, because I think the wild card games are played like Monday and Tuesday. But out of those teams, anybody you think you got a feeling for right now, do you think it's going to be an All-Missouri World Series? Is it going to be a Subway Series in New York? Is it going to be two L.A. teams, the Angels and the Dodgers? Or do you have none of those teams in the World Series?
It's rough. Being obviously from the Milwaukee area, I try to keep up with baseball as much as possible in between the football writing, but part of me, and I don't know, your old colleague Drew Olson mentioned that he was kind of the rooting for Kansas City.
I know you're not
a big fan of that, but
he's been a Yost lover from day one, though. So he's been a Yost apologist.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to doubt. I mean, the impressive thing, maybe I'll root just for someone from I don't necessarily have a favorite in the NL. I'll say someone from the NL Central that's not the Cardinals. But that's the fan in me. The logical person tells me St. Louis right now at 159, 60, almost a 63% winning percentage, which is impressive, especially for baseball season. And winners of the 7 of the last 10. I think they'll represent the NL. I think I'll go all Missouri right now. I like Kansas City, and obviously you want to root for some former Brewers, and I think they have the most talent. Lorenzo Cain, I thought he was a solid prospect. Elcides Escobar, among others. So, to me,
we can have a whole show about how I think Escobar is very, very overrated. Yeah, Cain's been fine, but would you have played him over Gomez if he was still here? Whatever.
I would have played him over someone in left field, personally, but that's just my...
Great. You can have him. I'll tell you what. It could happen. That could very well be the case. Again, I don't think it can be the Mets. I think with Harvey going to be limited innings, I'm not buying the Mets. The Dodgers, sure, but their payroll will be the best team in the National League. But, again, if Molina's healthy, St. Louis certainly has the edge. But I think without Molina, that affects the pitching staff. I don't care about what he does offensively anymore because, obviously, at his age, he's not hitting for the power he used to and all those other things. But the way he handles that pitching staff, he's like a pitching coach on the field. And I think that could change some things if he's not at 100%.
Yeah. We'll see what happens going forward. And obviously it's a wonderful time of the year where you have the playoffs in baseball. You have the Badgers and the Packers obviously playing at decent levels, at least for the Packers, albeit the injuries. And the Badgers are still working to find their identity in the running game and part of it on defense. But you're also, you have that. You have a big thing. You have Badgers hockey starting up soon. The women's team, we're going to have Nicole Hazy on the show, hopefully one of these days, preview some Badgers hockey on that. And also basketball, Scotty. You're looking at the training camp started. The Bucks are actually practicing in the Kohl Center this week with their partnership with the Badgers. And that's you have former Badger Marcus Landry on the Bucks looking to secure a roster spot. It's that time of the year where all the sports kind of converge. It's a good time to be a sports fan.
Absolutely, and we'll talk more about all of it, including hopefully some Bucks talk next week. And I'll be back in the state. I'll be back in the Midwest when we convene again. So I'm going to go enjoy the last few hours that I have here on the shores, and we'll talk to you next week.
Sounds great, guys. That's a Polish Rifle, Scott Wisniewski. Big thanks to Patrick Vint from Blackheart Gold Pants. Tune in next week. We'll recap Iowa, Wisconsin, Green Bay, San Francisco, and talk some baseball, among other talks. Guys, take care. Doza Bachenya. This has been the Kielbasa King Sports Extravaganza brought to you by Bucky's Fifth Quarter.
accordion solo, American Polka, played by Mr. John J. Kimball, Edison Records.